Subscriber's amazingly ultimate fundraising superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
What's the story, fundraisers? Thank you for tuning in for another episode. And today is yet another truly international episode. Today, we are beaming all the way across the world into Australia and speaking to very international type of person. My guest today is Linda Arnmark. Good morning slash evening, Linda.
Good evening. Good morning, Simon.
Yeah, I don't know what we are. We're kind of all over the place. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
And where are you speaking to me from?
I am speaking to you from Sydney, Australia.
Sydney, Australia. But what is your job title?
I am New Zealand Fundraising Manager at Médecins Sans Frontières.
Okay, so there's something doesn't add up there, and we're going to get into that. But you are based in Australia, but you manage New Zealand, which for you know my level of listeners, I have to remind them are different countries. So you are truly international. So thank you very much for joining me today. And I suppose that's specifically what I've asked you to come on and talk to me today, because you have a unique position in that you were one of the driving forces behind setting up MSF, Médecins Sans Frontières, in New Zealand. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I came back from my maternity leave with my second boy, and they said, this is what we want to do. And I kind of heard it bantered around the office for some time. Oh, what if we went to New Zealand and did some fundraising there? And never really thought much of it. But when I came back, they said, yeah, we definitely want to do this. And we need someone to drive it because we've been talking about it for too long. And so that was what I was doing. It was a complete flip for me from doing direct marketing for so many years, in that I had to learn the legalities of setting up a trust and bank accounts in New Zealand and applying for an IRD number, which completely different but very exciting at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine there's a lot to take in there, and we might talk about some of the practicalities of it. But maybe like let's set the scene. Your MSF, Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, they were pretty well established in Australia. Like they're big
enough. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So this year is our 25th anniversary in Australia. Mm-hmm. So we've been here a while and raising somewhere near 90 million a year. So wow. Very established. Yeah.
Yeah. And then over to the east was New Zealand, where they didn't have any presence at all.
No. So we knew that we had a few New Zealanders who would give through the Australian website. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the reason that we thought, hey, maybe we should look into this, because we already had a few quite engaged supporters, but we weren't really doing much with them.
And were people like almost asking for it? Were members of the public saying, what's your office address? Or was this just something?
No, not really.
No.
It wasn't anything. We had a few people who didn't realize that we weren't in New Zealand and would give on our website and then say, I didn't realize I was giving in Australian dollars and not New Zealand dollars. So
yeah, yeah. So because they see the wrong amount. Yeah, I could imagine. So the motivation was what? That you see, you guys saw this market of lots of people that you could potentially tap into.
Yeah.
So purely money driven? Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say so. And that was probably one of the things that we had to discuss within the office, that what is the purpose of our market entry there? And it is really fundraising driven.
Okay. Okay. So this seems like a big task to take on. Is this like an intimidating thing? Because you've obviously said you're just back from maternity leave. You had two boys at the time. You've now got three boys.
Yeah.
Like this seems like something I would not want to take on. And I only have one child. Like it just seemed mammoth.
Yeah. It was intimidating because everything was so new and different. And then having been away for a year as well, you're trying to catch up. And I can remember sitting in the office with my manager and with the head of finance at the time, and discussing the application that we had to go through just to get charitable tax status, which was probably one of the biggest hurdles that we had to go through. And at the end of it, they just said, "You look a bit sad." I'm not sad. I'm just, a bit.
Questioning how you arrived at that point in your life.
Probably played it off as just missing my child who was distressed at daycare or something.
Yeah.
Use them as an excuse when you can, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the reasons I had a son, is so I can use him as an excuse not to go to things and to fail.
Yeah. Oh, the babysitter didn't come.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. Okay, so I mean, New Zealand, what is New Zealand's perception of this in terms of the charitable tax thing? Like, is it, it's obviously difficult, or there's a lot of paperwork and setting up, but do they have a view of why is this organization coming in just to pull money out? And what, do they kind of question this stuff, or are they happy to have a big name charity like you?
Most agencies that we had to deal with, there was no question about it. People had heard of Médecins Sans Frontières, so that helped us. They knew our work and what we do and the benefits that we could offer to New Zealanders in participating in that work. I think for us, it was a big deal. We wanted to get the charitable tax status so that we could offer people the tax rebate that they get when they make a donation over $5. Mm-hmm. And we had to apply to Parliament for that, because the money that we use is not used in New Zealand. So they have to make an exception for you when it's money raised outside.
Mm.
And that delayed us because Parliament had a lot more pressing issues to deal with. So we kept getting told it was going to be tabled, and then it wasn't. So we had a few false labors with this, actually launching. But in the end,
And do they have a problem with it, or was it just about that it took time? I mean, do they object
to it? It just took time.
Okay.
They were fine. We had some, and we still work with some fabulous lawyers in New Zealand, and we couldn't have done it without them. They knew exactly what they needed in terms of the application, and they also had connections, so they could kind of get a sense for whether they thought there were going to be any issues, and there weren't.
Sure. So then, then you're talking about everything from ground zero, setting up a new website, getting the domain. Mm-hmm. What else is there? I kind of get my head around.
There was trademarking there. I mean, the big thing was organizational buy-in as well, because not everyone could see the benefit. And we really had to research the market, mm-hmm. set up the trust, register as a charity. Setting up a bank account was a nightmare with three trustees who were all traveling at different parts of the world at the time. And it seems like it should be a simple thing, but it was mammoth. But then it was, the office logistics. And that's probably still the biggest challenge. How do you make sure that without doubling up everybody's work, that you're giving New Zealanders enough of their own? So the website, for example, and the newsletter. So most of the time we don't create anything from scratch for New Zealand. Mm-hmm. We take what we know works in Australia and we tweak it and improve it if we can and test it. But it's quite challenging. And we make sure that we have a donor profile from New Zealand, for example, in the newsletter. But it's also a big deal because supporter relations now take all the phone calls from donors. They need to know a little bit about New Zealand, and even the way addresses are written over there is very different to Australia. So we were struggling with the format in the beginning, and all these little things that you don't think of at the time, but they come up. And I think it was a Pandora's box looking into the office logistics, because you think you had one thing solved, and then when you started looking at it, you found 10 more that you had to go and investigate.
Yeah,
and so on.
I could imagine it's almost like only as you're actually doing it, as a donor phones you, you suddenly realize, oh shit, our system can't even accept this. I can't even get it.
And I mean, our mail goes to a PO box in Auckland, and then that is forwarded to our office in Sydney. And our biggest challenge at the moment, which we're trying to think of different ways of doing, is that some people were calling up and canceling their checks because they were taking so long to get back to the bank in New Zealand after they got to us that people thought they had gotten lost and canceled them.
Oh, wow.
And so we really had to look at donor expectations and the donor journey and try to minimize some of that receiving time. And we're looking at potentially getting data entry and receiving done in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So that it doesn't have to come across the ocean.
Because you've no staff over there?
We have no staff. That was a decision the organization made at the very beginning.
Yeah.
That cost-wise, it just wasn't, it would never make sense for us to have an office, maybe in the future, but eventually. Not at the moment, because overheads would just be way too high.
So if I'm a Kiwi donor and I post through a check, it goes from New Zealand to Australia, and then you have to send it back to actually put it into the bank account.
Yeah.
That's a challenge.
So maybe it's not such a bad thing that Kiwi Bank is getting rid of checks.
Yeah, which
from
they've
a different
just,
perspective.
Yeah, and I've just been reading about that this week, that that's an issue that all the New Zealand charities are facing. It's strange.
Yeah, and there's more joining Kiwi Bank now, so...
So take me back to the organizational buy-in, because this is really interesting, you know, for listeners who are launching any new fundraising product or trying anything different, anything mm-hmm. new, any kind of change. It's mm-hmm. always, you know, we always hit that resistance or those people who don't get it or aren't behind it or, you know, that we really have to work with. So mm-hmm. is this something you were really conscious of from the beginning, or was it kind of quite reactive as you started to roll out, you saw people questioning it?
I think we were somewhat reactive, but I mean, I think because it was so focused on fundraising, there were probably a lot of questions from other departments, but mm-hmm. also questions from our own as to how we were going to have the capacity to do it and to do it from outside of the country.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that came down to just researching the market and showing people what the potential income could be.
Did you kind of pretend to the rest of the organization that you knew exactly what you were doing? Like, did you kind of play it down a bit, or were you quite honest and
I've been very honest with with this statement that we underplayed the impact to the staff in the office.
Okay.
But it won't be a big deal. People will just need to do, like, change the address on something on an appeal or whatever, and the return address. And it that is so far from the truth. And I think that's our biggest challenge at the moment and going into next year is staff capacity and making sure that people actually have the time to do it. And that's probably also because we're an office full of very driven and we want good results. So we're also perfectionists, which means that we don't want to do something just half when we can do it to the full. And that's like, we also have to, there's this idea in Australia that New Zealand is kind of the smaller cousin of Australia and that they just take Russell Crowe as their own credit or whatever. And it works both ways a bit. But also just realizing that they are two different countries.
Yeah.
And that was actually something that we got questions about. It was, how are you going to be culturally sensitive in New Zealand and culturally appropriate mm-hmm. when none of us are New Zealanders? And I still get the question, like, I think the executive director at a function, someone came up and he introduced me and then he said, wait a minute, you didn't hire a Kiwi, you got an American to do.
Yeah.
Or a Swede or whatever. Story, but.
Well, I think that, I mean, I imagine they're a little bit cagey about outsiders coming in, you know, especially like I think all countries are a little bit kind of cautious about people, outsiders coming in. But I think that there's a unique relationship, actually not even a unique relationship, because I think the relationship between New Zealand and Australia is kind of like the relationship between maybe Ireland and England and the relationship between Canada and North America, where the bigger one is kind of like, oh yeah, it's just like a friendly cousin and we share some stuff, whereas the little one is kind of like, fuck off, no, you're
thank you very much.
And so I imagine for a lot of Australian, you know, the Australian organization, it was sometimes underplayed in that there's a lot of similarity here. But I imagine if you asked a Kiwi, they would be telling you it's very, very different.
Yeah. And I think that's what I'm hoping to learn as we go and going to conferences and talking to New Zealanders. Even I think it's great to talk to the Uber drivers. And when I'm in Australia they ask me what I do, and I tell them they know who we are. And when I went to New Zealand, that wasn't the case. So I had to explain it. And I think that's a little bit of it. Like, we can't have this idea that we can't assume that everyone knows who we are, even though we are a global organization.
Yeah.
And that also means that our messaging needs to be different than it is in Australia, because they don't know who we are.
That's interesting. So we, you and I, we met for the first time at the New Zealand conference at Finns. And how was that? Because I assume you have some experience going to Australian conferences and dealing with Australian fundraisers. Was it a very different scene for you coming into it?
I love the Finns conference. It's the best conference I've ever been to. It was just, people were really approachable and easy to talk to. And most people were really excited to hear that we were in New Zealand. A lot of people didn't know. And when they found out, they wanted to know more about what we were doing. And so I think in some sense, we do have a reputation even from Australia in the fundraising sector in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So that always helps. And I think for me, the sessions, other than yours, of course, were not the most important for me or the most they were useful, but what I found even more so was just having the conversations with other people who work in the charity sector in New Zealand.
Yeah, I think
that's making those connections and being able to email them afterwards and say, hey, I've got a question about this. Yeah. I have no idea how it works because I'm not there, or trying to find a supplier who does this. Can you guys help me out? That's been invaluable from the conference.
Yeah, I can imagine. How do you think it would have gone different if you were not a known charity? You know, if you were a name that nobody potentially knew and you were trying to tap into a new country, would there have been a huge difference, or what do you think?
I think so. I think we're just able to leverage the history of MSF all the way back to its inception in France. And I think that is really valuable. We have a proven track record that we can show people already. And I think it means that people have a bit more trust in who we are as well.
Sure. And in terms of your supporter experience, you mentioned there that when people call or when people are engaging with you, they're engaging with the Australian office.
Yeah.
Is there pushback from any Kiwis, from any New Zealanders? Are they, you know, are they a bit weird about?
Not that I'm aware of.
No.
We decided very early on that we would be very transparent with our location, that we weren't going to try to mask it as anything that it's not. And I don't know of any complaints, to be honest.
Okay, good. So how what's the steps now in terms of growth, in terms of building? How are you bringing in New Zealanders who weren't there for you before? Are you doing just normal acquisition campaigns, or what's working for you at the moment?
Yeah, so we decided to go in with digital and face-to-face in the first year. So we started in 2017. Just because digital is quite an easy thing to do, and face-to-face, we have heaps of experience here in Australia. And so my colleague Damon runs that program, and he uses a lot of the same suppliers that we do here.
Okay.
And the idea was kind of just to do that for a while, and that would cause the least amount of impact in terms of the supporter relations team. We wouldn't be getting checks and cash. But we did so well that there was a bit of pressure to try other things. So we've done some magazine inserts and on the page advertising. And then in February of this year, we launched our first acquisition mailing, which also did really well.
Yeah.
And now we're doing our first warm appeal to donors.
Wow. Okay.
And that we're at 60% of target so far. So it's looking good, especially because the mail takes so long that
you don't know.
These massive bags of donations now and then. It's quite fun.
So like things like your face-to-face, you've just completely outsourced to an agency over there, your digital, you're doing remotely, or are you using
it in-house? And we also use an agency to do some of it as well.
Okay. And everything sounds like it's performing.
It's performing really well. So in our first year, we raised over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then for 2020, our target is 3.6.
Okay. And
that's kind of, that'll be, we'll break even then as well, which was what we needed to do to get the whole thing approved. So it's going well.
Congratulations. And is that because MSF is so good and you're so good at your job, or is there also an element of was New Zealand kind of untapped a little bit, like, because it's not a huge, like Ireland, it's not a huge fundraising market. So you're getting in people who've maybe had very few approaches or very little, few asks before.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I've totally lost my train of thought there.
That's all right. That happens to me all the time.
I think it was untapped. I think we've done some research and it's shown that the national charities, and I think it's the same everywhere, that national charities are the ones who get support easier because people can see the impact it's having. Mm-hmm. But I do think that we were a bit, the international aid was a bit of an untapped market.
Yeah, really? I mean, who's big in New Zealand over there? They have like World Vision and...
You've got World Vision. They're big. Oxfam. I'm not sure about Plan, actually.
Yeah, but they're all quite small presences. And I think actually a lot of them are probably tacked on to Australia like that as well. Like it's a bit of an afterthought sometimes, like Ireland.
And that's also something we have to consider, because everyone in the office is used to working with a very large market in Australia. And so we got some questions when the acquisition mailing performed very well. There was a little bit of pressure to increase the target for next year.
Sure.
And we did push back a little and say, you know what, these people have never gotten anything from us before.
Yeah.
And when we do it again, obviously we'll try some different lists, but there's going to be a lot of people who are not first time to us anymore. So we have to be a little bit conscious of that.
Yeah. You don't want to be seen to be like coming in, knocking shit over, just being like a big elephant charging into this little
room. But then we want them to sign up as a regular giver. So that's kind of where we're going with everybody.
I mean, MSF have a very strong monthly giving program, don't you? Usually internationally.
Yeah.
Okay. What if you did it again, like say there was an additional country there that you decided to go into and they put you in charge of it, what do you think you'd be doing differently? What would make it a lot easier now that you've actually gone through it one time?
I wouldn't assume that we weren't going to do mailings to people.
Yeah.
That's for sure, because it created a lot of stress for supporter relations, and especially when the first one was a cold mailing because no one was on the database, so they had to enter them all in.
Okay.
And also dealing with how the address formatting is supposed to be, et cetera, and obviously the donor journey, the back end has to be set up before you start. And I think that it's easy to just look at things and go, we'll do it as we go. But that aspect is so important. And we're not very good at thank you letters in MSF, in my opinion. It's all about us. So New Zealand is an opportunity for me because we don't have as many letters because they get added on year after year. To sit down, look at them and say, okay, I'm just going to rewrite these and try to get a bit more warmth and personality and more of the donor into it. So,
Do you have a bit of creative freedom in it, or do you kind of have to fall into the Australian line, or can you do what you want?
I am trying to push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah.
And so far, so good.
Okay.
I've had other people ask me, oh, can we use your letter in Australia too? Because we like it. So
Yeah.
I guess that's you've
almost got that small charity feel that
you
know, bigger charities are always trying to replicate. It seems to be like we get worse at thank you sometimes as we get bigger, because you're trying to do it to so many. So hopefully
we put a lot of attention into our appeals, and it's almost like the thank you letter is an afterthought, and I'm trying really hard to switch that so that it's part of the appeal process.
And like you said, it's key, because with a small market, you're going to be going back to a lot of the same people. So it's key to get it right the first time. You don't want to burn that bridge.
And we can't have people drop off and we won't have anyone left.
Remind me, what's the population of New Zealand?
Oh gosh, this was in my presentation.
Yeah. Do you want me to Google it?
I think it's...
Wow, you should...
I know Australia is 46 million.
It's 46 million in Australia? Yeah, it's about 5 million in New Zealand.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, just over 4.
And actually, I should know that, because it's about the same as Ireland. So it's really like, it is a small market for these things. And it's been worth it for you, hasn't it? It's paying...
Yeah, definitely.
Paying the bills.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. And long term, is it building? Do you ever see a point where you move to Wellington or that you set up an office there? Or what do you think is the long term here?
I think...
I'm not going to hold you to it.
I think for now we keep it pretty much what we're doing in Australia in terms of appeals. We've started moving things over. Like, everything used to be printed in Australia, but we don't really do that anymore. It just doesn't make any sense financially or environmentally. Mm-hmm. I can see us moving the data entry to New Zealand, but that would be with an agency to begin with. Whether that then leads to opening an office in New Zealand for that purpose. With the numbers, really.
I mean, from a lot of what you're talking about, it makes sense to use a third party or use an existing business that's already out there to support this, rather than setting up from scratch.
And I think we've been up and running for 2.5 years. That's such a short amount of time, but already we're doing so much more than we ever expected that we would.
And so in Australia, in the Australian office, how many of you are taking care of the New Zealand stuff? It's some of the supporter care work, and then you, and then who else gets roped into this?
It touches most of the departments. Communications obviously gets involved. They have to create a different version, but not entirely. It's bit plate changes and things, I think, of the newsletter that goes out to all our donors quarterly. And that was a bigger deal when we had the 25th anniversary edition for Australia. And we can't do that. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And that was doing too for them. And that was a lot, because they don't have any additional resources for New Zealand.
Yeah.
Finance is a big one, because they have to deal with two budgets in two different currencies. And at times that can get very confusing for people.
Yeah.
We have one database for our Australian and New Zealand donors. We'll see how long that can actually be maintained. Of course, supporter relations who have to deal face to face with the donors and the back end.
Yeah.
So
it seeps into everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. All right. Okay. Well, I suppose to finish on, I'd love to ask you if anyone else was looking at something like this. I mean, obviously, it's quite a unique experience, but I think a lot of charities do look at moving into different markets, whether that's different counties, different countries, different regions, whatever. You know, people do weigh this up sometimes. What would you say to them? Any wise words from someone who's done this?
I think do your research and surround yourself with people who are experts in the area that you're going to, and can help you along the way. Try to make friends wherever you go, because you never know when you're going to need one.
That's good advice for life, really. It's not just
and keep testing things. Never stand still. I have an analogy about my kids that they loved sweet potato, and so they would have sweet potato almost every day. But just because they love it doesn't mean that I don't try other foods like ice cream, which they'll almost do anything for.
Yeah.
And otherwise they would turn orange. So just keep testing and not make assumptions.
Here's a little quiz for you. What do they call sweet potato in New Zealand? Oh, no, Linda, you failed the international test. They call it Kumara. Kumara.
Oh, is it Kumara?
Yeah, so there you go. There you go.
Having grown up in the U.S., I also get very confused about, like, the pronunciation of various words, like basil and basil, and I don't know which one is what country anymore.
Aluminum, you guys say.
But they're actually spelled differently.
Oh, and you have a lot of weird spellings as well.
you guys do too,
absolutely. That kind of cross-border thing is so weird in terms of American spellings, you dealing with different currencies. In Canada, I have Canadian clients who have to deal with like French speakers versus English speakers. It's a challenge, but fun. It makes it interesting.
And it's also how we balance the... I should have said Kiora when I started today.
Yeah.
Not ingrained yet.
that would have been a big giveaway. All right. So if anyone maybe wants to pick your brains for advice, or anyone wants to talk more about this or hear from you, where's the best place for people to find you?
On LinkedIn, for sure.
Yeah. And it's Linda Arnmark. A-R-N-Mark. M-A-R-K. Very good.
Yeah.
And are you active on LinkedIn? Do you put stuff out there, or do you just lurk?
No, I have to say I just look. I'm trying to become more active.
Yeah.
I did a public speaking course recently, and they said you need a Twitter account and you need to do something on LinkedIn. So I went on LinkedIn and like updated my profile, but that was pretty much as far as I got.
Oh, very good. Okay, but LinkedIn, people can find you on there. People can reach out to you, ask you questions, and just generally keep an eye on what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks for sharing that, Linda. And I'm sure more questions are going to come up for me in my head. And down the road, I'd love to talk to you again and see how little New Zealand MSF is getting on.
That would be great. I hope to see you at Finns.
I hope so. I'm working on it. But I'll keep you updated.
I'll be there.
Good. Yeah, well, you have to. You're kind of a local now. You have to show your face.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Linda, thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever, you're big enough to make your decisions.
What's up, fundraisers? This is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell, and we are the founders of the virtual fundraising conference, Fundraising Everywhere.
And we have just launched Fundraising Everywhere membership. So if you want full access to the virtual conference every November, if you want full access to the Fundraising Everywhere festival in May, if you want bonus downloads, if you want access to extra sessions, if you want access to VIP events, if you want access to all of my masterclasses online, if you want Pizza for Losers discount, if you want all this stuff and loads more,
and a whole bunch of other stuff which we can't even cram into this tiny podcast ad. But if you want part of that, then go to fundraisingeverywhere.com, become a member, be part of the family, pay a small monthly membership fee to us, and you'll get all of this stuff.
Will that do?